Murdoch, ICAC, and the Village People. This is The Week on Wednesday. Hello and welcome to The Week on Wednesday. I am your host, Ben Davison, and with me, as always, is the delightful, the radiant, the basking in the afternoon sun.
Totally having a bask. We've got the garage door open.
Van Badham, how are you, Van?
I am delightful, Ben, and I am still your partner after all this time.
I know, right? Can you believe it, folks? She hasn't left me yet. Fingers crossed. Fingers crossed that she doesn't, that is.
Oh, in this sunshine. Who could leave anybody? It's so beautiful.
All right. So this episode's coming out late tonight because of the ICAC revelations.
I know we kept wanting to do the episode earlier, but so much kept coming out. We were like, just 5 more minutes. It was even, Ben and I had it on in the car. We wired the phone. I put a photo on Twitter into the radio. So we were listening to ICAC in the car.
And of course, we will also discuss today the Murdoch Civil War.
Oh my. Oh my. It's better than TV.
Well, I think they tried to make a show about it and it hasn't quite lived up to it. I hear it's quite good, though. I hear Succession is quite good. Please do not message me about it. I don't care. I don't watch it. I'm sure you enjoy it. Please don't tell me about it. And we also have some funny good news about the Village People.
Oh, yes. Disco's making a comeback well and hard, but we'll talk about that a little bit later on. ICAC, Ben, what's gone on?
Well, it looks like Daryl Maguire couldn't quite remember a whole bunch of things that he had done during his time in Parliament. And then when the receipts were produced, he suddenly remembered. Oh, no, I could never have done that, Your Honour. Well, let me produce these receipts that we have from when you did do it. Oh, I didn't know that you meant then. Oh, that thing that I did that I wasn't supposed to do, like tag bags of money from people who are immigration agents.
It wasn't bags, Ben. It was envelopes. Very Sorry. Different. So for those of you who aren't quite up to speed on the latest corruption scandal on New South Wales, and I just want you to be aware of the fact that I am from New South Wales, and every time that gets mentioned in this house, Ben generally says the word criminals.
Well, they were criminals. They are criminals.
Benjamin. My mother is not a criminal. So the ICAC is the Independent Commission Against Corruption. It's been a very successful corruption-fighting device in the state of New South Wales. It has brought down premiers. It's sent 11 members of the Liberal Party to jail.
I think so, yeah.
It has, of course, destroyed the careers of badly behaving Labor politicians.
That's true.
And now, of course, in its sights is a bit of a return appearance for Daryl Maguire.
He's coming back tomorrow, I hear.
Who is, of course, the former MP for Wagga. Now, let's just give you some background. Wagga is very safe Conservative territory. Federally, it is, of course, the leader of the National Party, the Deputy Prime Minister. I don't expect you to remember who he is, but his name is Michael McCormack, is the member down there federally. But it used to be as safe as houses. So if you got that seat, you basically had it for life. Daryl Maguire had it for 20 years, or yep, almost 20 years, and was leading quite a long and prosperous parliamentary career. He made it as far as parliamentary secretary. And of course, in 2018, he was brought undone because he had been accepting payments for arranging meetings between people who wanted to do property deals and tech deals and meet various other people, and was using his parliamentary connections in order to make money for himself, which is, of course, not on. And he was fired by the New South Wales Premier, Liberal Gladys Berejiklian. Well, how interesting to find out this week that Gladys Berejiklian has been in some kind of relationship herself with Mr. Maguire that lasted for 5 years during and past the period where she sacked him for being.
It's very strange.
Yeah.
Very strange behaviour.
And, of course, the discourse around this has been that that the Premier is, you know, entitled to her private life.
Sure.
Ben and I certainly don't judge people on their private lives because we're having one right now ourselves. Can you imagine? And, you know, whatever people get up to is fine. Unless it's getting up to text messages about property deals and the transaction of money when you are the Premier of New South Wales. So it doesn't actually matter if you're having a romantic relationship or a very close friendship or you go to the football together. If any of those conversations involve, guess what dodgy corrupt thing I did for money today, Premier, and you respond to that with anything apart from, I am the Premier, I will call ICAC. Well, basically, we have a problem, Ben.
Yeah, and I think that's really where people are at the moment with it. Like, people are really going, we don't really care what the nature of their relationship in
inverted late night Scrabble games, perfectly acceptable, really, except when they're about property deals and you're the Premier of New South Wales.
You know, he's sending text messages. She's saying, I don't need to know about that bit. He's confirming amounts. Like, it's a really dodgy situation. And now, of course, with today's evidence, where it seems like, oh, well, it was okay. Well, he was a backbencher to get money from other sources. But maybe where he's crossed the line is trying to set up meetings with developers and ministers.
Maybe he's crossed the line.
And maybe he's crossed the line by having illegitimate this is what was said today. I'm allegedly illegitimate, or maybe I should say that. Visa deals. You know, these are multinational arrangements where he's got Chinese nationals involved. He's seemingly signing off on dodgy paperwork. He's approaching local businesses to say that they'll sponsor people. And then there are envelopes of cash being exchanged at Parliament House. Like, it's a really dodgy, dodgy situation. And for the Premier to have any kind of relationship with someone who's doing things like that, it doesn't matter what the relationship is, it really calls into question her judgment. And the Liberal kind of framing on this has been, oh, well, you know, she had a bad boyfriend and all women have had a bad boyfriend.
Yeah, but all women are not the Premier of New South Wales.
And that's the thing. And, like, most guys have had a bad girlfriend too, right? But if... present company...
Sorry, hilarious niche joke there, Benjamin. Yeah.
Present company excluded. But...
Yeah, I should certainly hope
so. If Mark McGowan or Dan Andrews or Stephen Marshall, as it turned out, had a bad partner who was involved in corrupt behaviour and was texting them about it and talking to them about it on the phone, and they'd said, oh, look, just don't tell me about that. And it got to the point where that person had been sacked from their government, sacked from parliament, sacked from their political party, but then they maintained that relationship for 2 years. Like, I can't imagine a situation where people go, oh, well, that poor bloke just had a bad relationship.
No, that would never happen. And look, we would neck them because they would deserve to be necked. And let's just talk through the kind of stuff that Darryl Maguire has been doing. He's actually been diversifying his dodginess. He has dodginess in many different areas.
Allegedly.
Although I don't think dodgy is a legal term, so perhaps we can use it. But a witness who was a migration agent appeared on the stand for ICAC yesterday explaining an arrangement where Darryl Maguire, when he was on, by the way, a minimum of $150,000 a year as a state MP.
Yeah.
Like, $150,000 a year is the baseline salary for a backbench MP in New South Wales. And this is before we take into account the cars and the offices and the staff and all the expenses that you get as well.
Yeah.
Like, it's, and being a member for Wagga, you know, the hotel stays, all these deductions for being in Sydney. So even though he's on that extraordinary salary, he was allegedly, according to the migration agent, involved in arranging sponsorships from regional businesses to sponsor the migration of Chinese nationals to come to Australia and to do business, and was getting a cut and was being paid his cut in cash in envelopes that were allegedly handed out to him at Parliament House. Now, this is beyond dodgy. And I think the reason why this particular scandal enrages me is that we are told by the Liberal Party all the time, and have been since the 1970s, apart from that brief window of Fraser, and Fraser actually had to fight this in his own caucus, but obviously, you know, we've been living with this rhetoric against queue jumping when it comes to refugees for years. The Vietnamese were queue jumpers, you know, the Cambodians were queue jumpers, you know, everybody who comes out here, generally because we as a Western government have been involved in some horrible military business in their country that has resulted in thousands and thousands of deaths. They are queue jumpers coming out here on leaky boats, desperate for sanctuary, wanting to become Australian and start a new life. And the queue jumping has been going on with various foreign nationals if you cut the people in the Liberal Party in for a bit of the action, allegedly.
Yeah.
So at the moment, there's that family from Biloela, is a refugee family who are in detention at enormous taxpayer expense. All that family want to do, their two small children, is be Australian and continue to be part of the community. But because they're not wealthy foreign nationals, prepared to pay off a migration agent involved in some kind of dodgy business with regional companies and a super dodgy member of parliament, they can rot in a refugee prison on an island while foreign nationals can.
And of course, the Belwela community wants that family to come back.
They want that family back.
This is a productive part of the community. So it is. It is absolutely outraging. Outraging that this happens, and frankly, it goes to the very core of the problem with these kind of migration systems, is that they are corruptible and they are full of corruption. They rely on sponsorship from companies. That means the workers themselves, the people in themselves, are liable to exploitation, and we see that again and again and again and again. It creates instability in our labour market. It means that if you've got enough money, you can buy your way in, and it fundamentally undermines the trust in our system, because you get dodgy people like Darryl Maguire, in this case, prepared to take an envelope full of cash.
Oh, allegedly.
Allegedly.
But, you know, he's really struggling to prove just how absolutely innocent he is, because, Ben, I don't know if you heard, he miraculously broke his iPhone and iPad in a tractor accident.
Well, you know, those open-top tractors, there are so many of them still in service. That's the really, you know, it could happen to anybody.
I mean, you grew up in the country. You know a lot about tractors. How many iPads and iPhones have you lost simultaneously in totally unpredictable tractor accidents?
Yeah, I don't think I've ever had an iPad or an iPhone in a tractor or near a tractor. Certainly not an open-top tractor where it could fall out of the tractor and under a wheel. I mean, it's not 1935 in Kansas, right? Like, Wagga, sure, might have its issues, but it's not 1935 Kansas. We're not talking open-top tractors here.
That's our dog.
Anyway, ICAC is going to continue. Gladys is holding on for
it
dear
is
life.
Unbelievable. So there were two motions of no confidence in the Premier today. She survived both of them. There was some very interesting business going on with who voted for what. Obviously, Labor is pushing very hard for her to resign, because, you know, Gladys does a very good impersonation of holier-than-thou-ness, and throughout the whole pandemic has obviously had the favour of Scott Morrison as a Liberal Premier who hasn't managed to kill millions. And she, it's just hard to believe that this is in any way a genuine representation of the Premier, given the fact that she knew perfectly well that Darryl Maguire had sacked him from the Parliament, and yet she was continuing conversations with him about the full extent of his dodgy business. And there are records, there are phone records of this.
I remember seeing the media release and being actually kind of impressed that she took such strong action at the time. And now I'm just like, yeah, all of that was a lie. All of that was just hollow talk. And actually, your personal relationship with this guy continued on throughout all of that. And who knows what else was going on. I guess we'll find out.
Well, it's disgraceful. But the vote of no confidence in the upper house today was 20-20. And of course, and had to be broken by the president of the upper house in New South Wales. Obviously, the numbers were more on the government side in the lower house. But what's going to be interesting is her ongoing feud with John Barilaro. The National Party, who of course has been
Captain Koala Killer,
who's been brawling very intensely with her recently. He's been on sick leave since he threatened to pull his numbers from the caucus, and then she challenged him to do it, and then he didn't do it. But it'll be interesting to see how Barilaro's ambitions play into the current corrupt, dodgy, appalling, crooked mess in my home state of New South Wales.
I get the impression we may have to revisit this at some point in the not too distant future. For our next topic, something that has been influencing politics in New South Wales and Australia
for
decades, is the Murdoch Empire.
Oh my God. So big news this week. Kevin Rudd, former Prime Minister on a one-man mission to take down Murdoch, announced a petition, an official parliamentary petition, to open a royal commission into the dealings of the Murdoch Empire in Australia. Of course, we have one of the most highly concentrated media markets in the world, Murdoch owns most of it. It is absolutely extraordinary out of a totalitarian state for one organisation to control just so much media. And I would happily list all of the different properties, television,
but
newspapers.
We
literally don't have time, and I'd be reading it out for 10 minutes. I do encourage you to Google it. But Rudd's petition was so popular, it was repeatedly crashing the Parliament House website. There was such a rush of people to find out exactly the extent of the relationship between the Murdoch Empire, News Limited, News Corp, and also with the government is
absolutely
totally worthy of scrutiny, given the fact that we know that that government messages and policy positions are heavily influenced by Murdoch commentators.
Absolutely.
In fact, you could ask Malcolm Turnbull, who was never popular and seen as a bit of a red, the merchant banker from eastern Sydney who was worth millions and lived in like a 50-foot castle on a beach or whatever the hell it was. Yes, he was seen as a bit of a red by Murdoch. And, of course, the Murdoch minions tore Turnbull apart, even though he was theoretically wearing the correctly shaded blue tie. The political influence of that family is extraordinary. But Ben, you have some interesting insights about what's going on with James Murdoch.
Well, of course, James Murdoch resigned from the board of News Corp the end of July, start of August. And at the time, he was quite down on News Corp's approach. And he had been talking about the issues with Fox News in the US, some of the editorial lines, particularly around climate change. And I think most people kind of saw that as, well, he cares about climate change, News Corp's not going to take this on, and he can't, even though Roger Ailes has died, he can't kind of...
Roger Ailes, the former director of Fox News.
Yeah, he can't quite reshape the company, and he's packing up his kit and going. But of course, what's come out in the last few days is that actually he knew that News Corp is involved in misinformation. And part of the reason he left was that he couldn't get them out of this space. He talks about, sure, you want to have a contest of ideas, but the news should be able to provide people with facts in order to have a contest of ideas based on reality. And in fact, News Corp takes the opposite approach. This is a huge admission from one of the children of Rupert Murdoch.
Mm.
This is not, you know, a disgruntled executive. This is not a journalist who feels like their stories didn't get enough airtime. This is a child of Rupert Murdoch who sat on the board of News Corp,
who is in a position to inherit
billions of dollars.
Extraordinary
wealth.
And
who already has extraordinary wealth. Like, let's be honest, James Murdoch is not a pauper because he's not on the board of News Corp anymore. He is in no way needing to come out and do this. He has come out and said this because it's obviously true. He has come out and spilled the beans. You couple that with Rudd's petition. You couple that with the analysis that shows that every Queensland state election for the last five or six, the Murdoch media has encouraged people to vote for the LNP, right, regardless of what their policies have been, regardless of what Labor's been doing. And you can start to really see the pattern here. This is not a news company. This is not a news company.
No, it's a propaganda organisation. And I think the dead giveaway, if people... A really good example of the News Corp model is the promotion of the drug hydroxychloroquine in the United States, where a parade of Fox News celebrities like Laura Ingraham went on her show and was saying hydroxychloroquine was this miracle drug and it was a conspiracy by the Democrats to deny it to people, and why can't we just promote hydroxychloroquine? And of course Trump gets COVID, and what drug did he not take, Ben?
That's right.
What did he not take? Prison in the United States.
Hydroxychloroquine.
Prison in the United States, man in control of the world's largest economy and largest nuclear arsenal. Two thoughts that keep me absolutely sleepless at night, as well you know, and yet he does not get treated with the drug that Fox itself has been spruiking. And it's part of a model that we see with Fox where the issue is not to inform, the issue is to confuse and to keep people frightened and anxious and aware of an enemy, because when you're frightened and when you're angry, you're actually easier to manipulate.
Oh, and let's be really, really brutally honest about this, right? So, you know, I have a Dean's Award in marketing, and I can tell you...
I know, Ben. I know you've told me
without a shadow of a doubt that when people are confused, when people are angry, when people are anxious, they are more likely to click on stuff, they are more likely to buy stuff, they are more likely to do things that will give them a small amount of dopamine or serotonin, right? And What is the Murdoch Empire in the business of? It's actually in the business of advertising, right? And what they need is people to click on things. They need people to buy things. They need people to engage with their advertisers. So there's undoubtedly a political element to this. There's a political element that's about conservatism, that's about keeping the status quo, that's about allowing them to do what they want to do.
Yeah, making government supplicant to them.
Yeah, but at the same time, there's undoubtedly a part of this that's also about just making us buy more garbage.
Well, let me tell you, I was actually in the United States of America. I was in Texas, in Dallas, of all places, when Lehman Brothers collapsed in the United States, which was the beginning of the global financial crisis. And because I was in Texas, I was literally trapped in a hotel room with Fox News. And it was like Fox News or like unimaginable redneck porn. And I picked Fox News and sort of regretted it not too long afterwards. But it was an amazing thing to watch because it was genuinely just hyper. It was off the hook. It was screaming. It was panic. It was, oh my God, the economy's collapsing. Nobody knows what to do. What are we going to do? You know, this, and these newsreaders who were just like terrified.
Yeah.
And then it would cut to an ad for a drug that my brain calls Flamitavax. And it was literally, oh my God, the economy's collapsing. Everything's terrible. Burn it all. Burn it all. And then this lovely soothing tone of Flamitavax, do you suffer from anxiety, nervousness? Do you struggle to get to sleep at night? You might want to try Flamitavax. And there's a list of possible side effects include your head exploding, nosebleeds, you know, babies coming out of your mouth kind of thing. And it was, I was like, this is it, isn't it? This is the Fox News model.
Yeah. Thankfully, our dog is now barking at people walking past. But thankfully, in Australia, it's illegal to advertise prescription medicines. But make no mistake.
Oh, they're not prescription. Oh, as if they prescribe anything in America, you just buy it over the counter and take your luck, you know.
The Murdoch Civil War is going to continue. It's going to be something that, again, we've got to keep an eye on these things. We can't let the Murdoch Empire control the media, you know. And obviously, we've got our own podcast. Van has a column in The Guardian and writes sometimes for The New York Times and some other really great publications. We'd encourage other people to share this podcast and, look, start your own as well, you know. Like, engage with the issues that are happening around you. Talk to people. Van had a great piece on how to deal with people who get sucked into conspiracy theories the other day, and I suggest you have a look at that on The Guardian as well.
And by the way, if we ever get anything wrong, we want our listeners to contact us and tell us, because Ben and I have very strong opinions. We are committed left-wing people, but we're committed left-wing people who love facts. Oh my God, we love facts.
The Week on Wednesday at gmail.com or Week on Wednesday at Twitter. You can get in contact with us there. If you think we've got something wrong, let us know. If you think there's something we should be checking out, let us know. We are going to push through, though, because there's some interesting things that are happening down at the YMCA with the Village People, Van.
Young
tell us
man,
the good news.
Young man, I've got to tell you, it is just, Trump is my obsession. And I will be, please let him lose the election. So despite the fact that he was diagnosed with coronavirus a mere 10 days ago, he's back on the campaign trail. Like, it's amazing. He's doing indoor events with people packed in close together, pretending as if coronavirus isn't a thing, because I can only presume he's roided out of his mind.
That is
the
rumor.
He's painted as orange as a mango. It is genuinely terrifying to watch. And I keep reading.
Do you think that's an appeal to Florida voters? I'm confused.
Because they grow oranges there. I don't know.
Anyway.
But he's back on the campaign trail and he's doing rallies. There was a great piece, I think it was in the New York Times yesterday, that was about the fact that he's addicted to rallies. Like, he's got to do rallies because he's got to feel the adoration, and it's, I'm so glad the whole world is being endangered by this man's ego. But he finished it by showing everybody how well he was by doing what I can only describe as white man wedding dancing, like a couple of sort of weird backward shuffles. I described it on Twitter as like when your really drunk uncle tries to hit onto you at the dance floor of your cousin's wedding because he's forgotten you're related. That's what it looked like.
But as a white man who dances very poorly, according to my African football friends,
and your girlfriend,
and any casual observer, it was worse. It was worse than just white man dancing. It is terrible. If you see the video, you check it out online, you'll be able to find it. It's pretty bad.
It's kind of, you know, you suddenly you're really proud of your dad, and and he was dancing to YMCA, which is, of course, the great queer disco classic from the great queer band, The Village People, like one of my favourite musical outfits of all time, as you well know. And, you know, The Village People, their message has always been about inclusion.
Absolutely.
And they have always said our music is for everybody, as long as no inference can be gained that we are endorsing anyone or anything. You know, disco's for you and me, baby. It's for the world. But times have changed, and the guy who's the cop from The Village People, the lead singer, who is, of course, Wade, who's responsible for a number of their hits, was like, you know, enough. I saw this guy direct the gassing of peaceful protesters in Lafayette Square during the Black Lives Matter protests in America, and enough. You are not to use our music anymore. And this is amazing because he joins quite the list of people who have said this to the Trump campaign. This includes Steve Tyler and Aerosmith. This includes the estate of Prince. This includes Neil Young. This includes Rihanna. Like, there is, and quite a number of other musicians who are like, we do not want to be associated with you. And I'm like, dude, if you're getting kicked out of the funky club by The Village People, you have totally crossed a line. So I just want to say solidarity to The Village People and to disco, which will never die.
On that very, very positive note, we are done with The Week on Wednesday for this week. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for sharing our podcast. It's really going really, really well.
And you guys who are sharing it are doing us a huge favour because our audience is building all the time and we love it.
So please keep that up. Check us out on Twitter. Check us out on Facebook. If you do have a story you want us to check out, if there's anything you think we've said that needs to be reviewed, revised, do let us know.
But, like, not that we've had any complaints. We just want you to know. We love the truth.
Yeah, absolutely. And we really, really want to try and explore any issues or topics that you think are important. So really do get in touch with us. We mean that from the bottom of our hearts. Thank you so much for listening. Love you, Vanny.
I love you too, baby. And so does the dog who is on my lap.
Bye.